This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
On its present trajectory, the extra unemployment money from the federal government is set to run out. I'm David Brancaccio. Congress and the president are deciding whether to extend the extra $600 a week in unemployment benefits workers are getting because of the pandemic. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer is on the line here. Now, yesterday, the U.S. Labor Secretary said he believes the program should not be extended.
Right. Labor Secretary Eugene Scalia testified yesterday before the Senate Finance Committee. He pointed to last week's unexpectedly good jobs report, which you remember showed unemployment fell in May to about 13%. The extra $600 a week payment is set to expire at the end of July, and it's on top of regular unemployment benefits, which would continue. And Scalia says by July 31st, much of the economy will be back open and employers will be hiring.
But many want the $600 a week to keep coming, including Democrats.
Yeah, they say unemployment is still historically high, and they don't want people to feel like they have to go back to jobs they feel are unsafe because of COVID-19. Democrats want to extend the extra $600 in unemployment benefits through January. Republicans say with that extra money, some people are making more on unemployment than they would by working.
Any wiggle room here? Compromise possibly?
Possibly. Some Democrats say the extra $600 payment should be tied to the unemployment rate, so they'd only continue as long as unemployment remained high. And Secretary Scalia mentioned the possibility of bonuses for people who return to work.
Nancy is a Marketplace Washington reporter. With the pandemic, many credit card companies had set up ways for customers to defer paying what they would normally owe. Now the Discover Card outfit says the amount of payments being deferred dropped 90% April till early June. This is a sign that some distress may be easing. Here's Marketplace's Justin Ho.
If fewer people are deferring their credit card bills, they're probably better able to pay them off, says Andrew Davidson at Comper Media.
Perhaps they got their stimulus check, perhaps they got unemployment benefits, or maybe they even found a job.
Davidson says in the long run, it might be better for customers' financial health to pay off that credit card debt instead of deferring payments for longer.
In most instances, interest still accrues, and so consumers are effectively kicking the can down the road.
He says it's also welcome news for the credit card companies when customers come off those deferral plans. That's because banks don't have to set aside as much cash in case people default. Matt Schultz at LendingTree says banks want to maintain good relationships with customers.
It's not just about somebody having a credit card. It's about somebody having a credit card and then potentially being able to upsell them to a mortgage or a car loan.
And he says banks can now point out they were willing to cut customers some slack in a time of need. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
The Federal Reserve briefing on the economy and stimulus in the face of COVID will happen in about 4 hours. Interest rates are already near zero, and aficionados will be scouring every public syllable for hints about the shape of the hoped-for recovery. And today, the Club of Industrialized Countries, the OECD in Paris, has assessed the world economy and has labeled the situation dire. Many Wednesdays, we consult Susan Schmidt, head of U.S. equities at Aviva Investors.
The OECD is suggesting that the U.S. economy will drop more than 7% in 2020, and the global economy down about 6%, Europe down 9%, and some of the countries that were hit heavily within Europe, maybe even down more than 11%, countries like Italy, France, and the U.K. So clearly, they're suggesting more support. In their perspective, the end is not in sight. You don't want to take away that support too soon. I think that message is going to be backed up by the Fed statements today, because Chairman Powell has been very vocal in saying that we need support from the central banks. Now, that's him, and he's giving it, but also that we need continued support from the government.
Susan Schmidt is head of U.S. equities at Aviva Investors in Chicago. With calls by activists to take money away from police departments and redirect funds to other programs that help communities thrive, there is at the very least renewed thinking about ways policing can change. The thrust in parts of Europe is formal community participation, guiding the way law enforcement is carried out. My Marketplace colleague, the BBC's Victoria Craig, is here with more.
Well, the idea of this model here is to figure out what the best role is for police in protecting an individual community so it can thrive. The European style of community policing is essentially setting up a system in which members of society collaborate with law enforcement in an ongoing way. Experts say the ultimate goal of all of this is to build trust. The Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe researches this and says officers need to listen and respond when members of the community flag problems or offer innovations to the strategy, and they need to be accountable for actions and outcomes. So the OSCE recommends reorienting police patrols so officers can more often respond in person to non-emergencies like disputes between neighbors or petty theft.
All right. And so where in Europe might this be working?
With the European model of community policing, one size doesn't fit all. So I spoke to Dr. Elizabeth Aston, who's the director of the Scottish Institute for Policing Research. She explained community policing has been successful in places like Scotland, where there's a very long history of public police partnership. And it's also been successful in Helsinki, where police have worked for a while to establish a relationship with city organizations and community members on problem solving and crime prevention, specifically in shopping areas. Now, Dr. Aston emphasized that this work needs to include schools, mental health experts, youth services, which themselves often might not have the funding they need from government budgets.
A lot of preventative work should be done across departments. Unfortunately, when other social services are defunded, then that reduces the ability of other state organizations to be operating in this preventative, collaborative space.
But again, we say model, but clearly this approach has to adapt to the place where it's used.
Exactly. So for this approach to work, you have to consider social, political, and historical contexts. The whole idea of community policing is to engage everyone and encourage them to shape their own community problem-solving strategies. If you don't approach it in the right way, it's basically almost doomed to fail from the beginning.
My Marketplace colleague, the BBC's Victoria Craig in London, thank you.
My pleasure, David.
And who among us loves the robocallers with their unsolicited solicitations? You over there just raised your hand? Okay, but others may differ. And I wanted to tell you that the FCC has just proposed a record $225 million fine against some Texas-based health insurance telemarketers. They allegedly made a billion robocalls, falsely pushing health insurance supposedly from name-brand firms. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM. American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.